Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impact on the African-American community. The Women of Color Network is a project of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and is dedicated to ending violence against women of color and their families by promoting the leadership of women of color advocates. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Now, on to tonight's show.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of Color Network Blog Talk Radio Show. The Women of Color Network represents hundreds of women of color advocates serving in the trenches across this nation. We bring you information, data, stories, opinions, practices, philosophies, approaches, strategies, and years of experience. But most of all, we bring you informative live talk with a range of expert guests. We will take callers, and we'll open our lines around 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 Central. And if you have a question you would like to ask our guests, you can call in at 855-234-9131. That's if you have a question or you want to make a comment, you can call us at 855-234-9131. I also want to remind you that of something very important. If you're listening and you're in immediate danger, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And I'm going to give you that number. That number is 800-799-7233. So if you're listening to this show and you feel like you are in immediate danger, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. My name is Samaya Fire, and I am the Leadership Director at the Women of Color Network. I also work as a consultant and a community organizer. And so I am one of the hosts for tonight. And my co-host, my friend, and my sidekick and colleague is Miss Alice Lynch. Miss Alice, are you there?
Good evening. I am so glad to be back on the air with my loved ones. Been a little bit under the weather, but I'm here persevering because I didn't want to miss out on anything because, you know, when you get old, you get real nosy. So I just need to know what's going on all the time. I'm delighted to be here with you, looking forward to a great show. And I, right now, am the chairperson for the Women of Color Network, and I'm also a private consultant working in the area of restorative justice, restorative practices, domestic violence, sexual assault, chemical dependency, and anything that has an impact on our community. So I am delighted to be with you, and we're going to move on by turning it over to Ms. Tanya Lovelace Davis, who's going to set the framework for tonight. Tanya?
Thank you, Ms. Alice. And good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Tanya Lovelace Davis, and I'm the CEO for the Women of Color Network, Inc., and I will be framing tonight's topic by providing key statistics and sharing background information for our show. Violence against girls is a crisis of national proportions that cuts across every divide of race, class, and ethnicity. The facts are staggering. 1 in 4 American girls will experience some form of sexual violence by the age of 18. 15% of sexual assault and rape victims are under the age of 12. Nearly half of all female rape survivors were victimized before the age of 18. And girls between the ages of 16 and 19 are 4 times more likely than the general population to be victims of rape, attempted rape, or sexual assault. Black youth are overrepresented as victims of teen dating violence. In a 2003 national study of high school students, almost 14% of African-American youth versus 7% of white youth reported that a boyfriend or girlfriend had hit, slapped, or physically hurt them on purpose. Boys and girls were almost equally likely to report being a victim of dating violence. And yet we found in another study of high school students that 11.5% of black girls were reporting being physically forced to have sexual intercourse as well. In addition, 22% of homicides that result from domestic violence and intimate partner violence happen to black girls, making it one of the leading causes for death of black girls and black women between the ages of 15 and 35. As black women and girls, we are also less likely to report or seek help when we are victimized. Human Rights Projects for Girls, a report conducted by Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality, exposed the way in which girls of color who have been sexually and physically abused were criminalized by the criminal justice system, including the detention of girls who are victims of sex trafficking, arrested for prostitution, and punished as perpetrators rather than served and supported as victims. And it's also it has shown that girls who were arrested by the police when they reported domestic abuse due to stereotypes or being the aggressor and deserving of their abuse is the ways in which they were seen and discussed by the police. An Oregon study found that 93% of girls in the state's juvenile justice system have been sexually or physically abused at some time. South Carolina research found that 81% of girls in its system had experienced sexual abuse. More harmful still is the significant risk that the punitive environment will re-trigger girls' trauma and even subject them to new incidents of victimization, which can compound the profound harms inflicted by the original abuse. Suffering abuse and constant harassment from a young age has many ramifications and negative consequences on the health, and particularly mental health and well-being, of black girls and young women. For communities of color, it is important to establish services that address the needs of black girl victims. And while some mainstream programs attempt to respond to those needs, they are not universally addressing them in sufficient numbers. By addressing domestic and sexual violence experienced by black girls in a way that understands their culture and honors their values, we greatly increase the chances of making a difference. We invite the listening audience this evening to join in on our conversation as we address the impact of domestic and sexual violence on our black girls. And I'll pass it back to Ms. Alice.
Thank you, Tanya. As always, a lot of good information, and you're giving us a good starting point. I'd like to introduce our guest that we have with us tonight. She's one of my, I like to call them daughter friends, because I look at her the same way I would my daughter, and I am just so proud of her accomplishments. Her name is Artika Rolla, and she is the Women's and Children's Program Director for Women's Advocate. For those of you who don't know, Women's Advocate was the first battered women's shelter in the country and is located here in St. Paul. Ms. Rolla has over 12 years of management and leadership experience providing advocacy for women that have experienced sex trafficking, sexual exploitation, sexual assault, and domestic violence. She holds a BSW from Metropolitan State University and is a 2012 graduate of the Executive Leadership Institute at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor School of Business, and School of Social Work. Ms. Rolla plays a key role in public policy advocacy and has been active in legislative advocacy for the national model safe harbor legislation that treats minors as victims of sex trafficking. She is an active coalition leader for engaging and dismantling systems that perpetuate violence against women and youth. And she's always willing to give of her time and her talents to speak before young people and adults about this issue. So welcome aboard, and we thank you for being with us tonight, Artika.
Well, thank you for having me. Hello, Tanya and Shamaya, Miss Alice. Appreciate you having me on the talk show today. And I really want to say thank you to all three of you for the work that you're doing in our community to raise awareness around these issues of violence against women, and especially our young women.
Thank you. Our topic tonight is the impact of domestic violence and sexual assault on Black girls. And Artika has years of experience of working with both girls and adults, and in some cases working with girls into adulthood who are still caught up in this system of being trafficked and abused and used by people who proclaim that they care about them. But one of the first questions I think we should think about is, what are some of the health consequences for girls that experience high rates of abuse, consistent harassment, and how young of an age do many of them start at?
You know, for dating violence, what the research is saying, it's around 16 where young women are first starting to report, violence. So violence from their partner. When we look at trafficking and sexual exploitation, we're seeing that young girls are entering the commercial sex world at about 13, early teens. So, but when we look at average ages, we have to remember that means that some entered at 8, and then we had some maybe a little bit older, around 16 or 17. When I started this work, I hardly ever seen any young women around younger than 16. And as the years have gone on, unfortunately, they have gotten younger and younger, and it wouldn't be uncommon for me to talk to a young woman who says, I've been in the life since I was 11 years old. The health consequences are just numerous. We have some traumatic brain injury, because unfortunately when there is violence against a young woman, a lot of times the perpetrator actually bangs her head either on the wall or on cement, on concrete, and that can cause some cognitive damage and then some brain damage. So we see a lot of cognition issues with young women that we work with. The other things are around trauma. So they could have post-traumatic stress on top of complex trauma from maybe early childhood abuse that has carried on into their young adult life. And then we want to talk a little bit about the historical trauma that Black women have faced and suffered throughout our history. So the trauma, the effects of trauma and the effects of post-traumatic stress shows up in different ways. It could be irritable bowel syndrome. It could be anxiety. It could be hypervigilance. So there's a lot of health consequences and mental health consequences. We see some of the young women in the shelter that are having night terrors, that can't sleep at night because that's when their trauma shows up. And the symptoms show up at night. The other things that we see is just depression, long-term depression, and not having the contact, the love, the care, and contact with people that would nurture them through that process. So those are some of the health effects that we see when we're working with young women.
Mm-hmm. So, Artika, you mentioned a term with women who are in shelter at night. You said it's night cares or night tears. What was that?
Night terrors, and that would be when they're sleeping and they wake up in the middle of the night screaming. Some children also may have night terrors. but that is, you know, being scared of the dark and unable to sleep, and then having dreams that wake them up, and reoccurring dreams about the abuse, the trauma, and the victimization.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the age of these girls entering trafficking or being sexually abused around 11, 12 years old. And so some of the, and you talked about the cognition and those kind of things as a result. So some of the things that we're seeing with girls and anger, is that associated with the violence?
Well, it's definitely associated with the violence from the experience that we have working with young women. And usually when I'm working with a young woman, I say, you mm-hmm. deserve to be angry. These things mm-hmm. should not have happened to you. So I want to recognize the fact that you have something to be angry about, and I'm not going to dismiss that. So now how do we work through that? So some of the violence we are seeing is based in their trauma. The other thing is, you know, that has been their survival skills. I've had to fight my way through all of these things. And that's what I know, that's how I know that I can survive. I've been okay if I fight back sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Artika, let's talk a little bit about how do these children become victims?
And there's many ways that they become victims. And unfortunately, what is lending to the victimization right now is access to the Internet. You know, there has been a back and forth. Do we have more victims now, or are we just exposing the way that people are victimized? And I think that probably is what's happening, the latter, that we are just more conscious and it's coming to the forefront, because I've worked with women that are 65 to young girls that are 8 or 9, and they all talk about victimization. And how this happens, unfortunately, sometimes it is parents that sell their children, or they are also the perpetrators of the violence against their children. The number one perpetrator of violence against young girls and boys is mom's boyfriend. So not their biological father, but mom's boyfriend. That is the number one perpetrator that we see. The other things that happen to young people when we're talking about older girls is that they are, you know, kind of finessed by their exploiter. So there is an older gentleman, and I use gentleman loosely, but there is an older person that's paying them attention to them, and they are seeking out that attention and that affection and want to be in that relationship, but just are not experienced enough or mature enough to be in a relationship with someone that is that old. Rarely do we see two teenagers, a boy and a girl, where the girl is being sold. Even though there might be some violence in that relationship, we usually see that the young person is older than the girl.
So we're talking about...
And I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. So we're talking about... more about manipulation, psychological manipulation that takes place with these
correct.
Younger girls by these older men.
That's correct.
What about drugs and just the violence itself that's used against them?
You know, I do see drugs, and more as I do this work, I'm seeing drugs. When I, 10 years ago, I really wasn't seeing young women that were under the age of 18 that were addicted to drugs. I see them using, trying to act like an adult, but really didn't have significant substance abuse issues. But now I am seeing that the perpetrators are really pushing drugs on young women. And recently. I had a 14-year-old who was addicted to crack and to meth. And, you know, what does that do on a young developing brain that doesn't mature until the age of 25 or older? What will happen to her ability to process and engage and track and all of those important things that we need as we grow older as adults and we're making more adult decisions that affect the rest of our lives. And so those type of things really do scare me when I look at the addiction that I'm seeing young women come in. High levels of marijuana use. It's not the marijuana that we knew when we were younger. They just have higher levels of chemicals and different ways that the marijuana is processed now, which leads to some higher rates of addiction. And I know that people will argue those points about marijuana a little bit, but the fact is that there's just higher levels of chemicals in the marijuana now. And you can tell by the different prices, I think that, you know, back in the day, a dime bag was $10. And, you know, I hear crazy rates as, you know, 100 to 200 to more for a product now. So things have changed when we're looking at addiction. Mostly what I used to see is older women that had that were addicted or using. Some of the young women tell me because they're exploited in different ways. They may be forced to dance. They may be forced to dance at parties. And so they're saying, well, I drink so I can dance, or I smoke so I can get on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Ma, you got any questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you've given us a lot of really good information, and it's a lot to process. But you know, I'm thinking about the information for one, and then number two, you know, we have these conversations as colleagues and older women and people who have, you know, been around these kind of situations. So what would you say to a person who may be listening to us who is not familiar with all of it, especially in terms of knowing the signs? If, you know, you think your daughter is, you know, not into all of this kind of thing, and how would a person know?
And I think that parents might not know everything that's going on. But if you're parenting, you know something's up. And the things that we look at is, when are they coming home? Every time they get on the phone, do they have to leave the room to have a conversation with this particular person? Because there should be some conversations that they can have in front of you. I know that youth like to be private, but every time they pick up the phone and this person's on the phone, that should be a red flag if they have to leave to go have the conversation. New things, friends that you don't know, and then friends that you see and you have questions about who this friend is, that's throwing up red flags. A way of recruitment into some of these relationships, unfortunately, is through other girls, and part of their obligation to their abuser, trafficker, pimp, exploiter would be that they need to go recruit other girls and bring them in. Those would all be red flags for me. The first, and I would say if you see any marks on your child that they can't explain away, you know, they're, and just drawing away from you, just that distance. And then if you're suspecting drug use, that wasn't there before they met their new friends. You know, kids are not good at covering up everything, but the adults that are behind it will coach them to cover up stuff. You know, I have two young adults, college age young men in my life, and my children, and they tell me a lot. They tell me what's going on. They don't tell me everything. I'm not that naive, but they do tell me what's going on. And a lot of these things are happening over the phone And you, unfortunately, there's just no privacy. If you're paying that phone bill, you should be privy to the password and should be able to check it. And at the very least, go online and see who they're calling and what numbers are coming up. Those would all be things that I would tell parents to stay engaged. And you know your child.
So what about contacting your program? What number would they call? What website, you know, would they go to look for?
Well, the program that I'm currently working for is a domestic violence shelter, and it is Women's Advocates. We could be located online at Women's Advocates, Inc. in St. Paul. And then my phone number there would be 651-726-5202.
And so if a mother or a father, just parents, were concerned about their daughter and maybe thinking that she may have experienced some kind of sexual violence, they could call that number?
They could definitely call that number. I get those calls quite often. And then I also get emails, and my email is aroller, that's the letter A, R-O-L-L-E-R, at wadvocates.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I am really good about returning emails and phone calls, and if I don't have the information that you need, I am pretty resourceful, and I'll get you to the right place.
Mm-hmm. And so when parents call you, are their suspicions usually pretty right on that something's going on?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't know the extent of it, but they know that something's not right. And it's hard for young women. I was just talking to a young woman who said, I am intelligent. I am a smart person. I can't believe I got caught up. And that's what happens to a lot of our young women. What I can say is that young women may get find themselves in these situations, but if they have parents, supportive community, a supportive network, those are the young women that get out right away and are able to recover.
Well, I want to throw this out here before we go to break. I am doing some work in our public schools. And my concern is for our middle school age girls who
yes.
are vulnerable, who are having some personal issues, who are going through some growing pains, who are, and these are girls who are between 11, 12, and 13 years of age.
Yes.
Who have the wrong idea about what life is about, who before they will follow directions, they'll run away, and they become street kids. They become too involved in too many of the wrong things. And I think some of our teachers and other school staff are concerned, and they are seeing what these girls are doing, but they don't know how to approach the girls in a good way, in a non-threatening way, and because these girls are vulnerable, and the teachers and the pimps go after them. Because they know that they're looking or searching for something. So one of the things I talk about is what can we do in our schools to support some of the staff there in recognizing some of these issues and helping them to try to lead these girls in the right direction? Because I see it happening all the time. I actually see the girls out there in the street being pimped. And and then when they see me, they're like, ooh, you saw me. But they don't have an idea as to why they're doing it. Well, I needed some extra money, and I was told this was a way to get it. And if I go home, I got to deal with my mom yelling and screaming at me because I haven't been home for 2 days. So it's that kind of thing that I want us to try to just focus a little bit on when we come back.
Right.
It's time for us to take
that
a commercial
good.
Break or a music break or a timeout for the car.
Some kind of break.
You are interested in calling in or want to ask a question or make a comment, please think about doing it in this next half hour. And the number you can call is 347-327-9611 or 855-234-9131. So hang in there with us for a couple of minutes. We'll be right back.
To Sister Tanya Lovelace and the staff and advisors of the Women of Color Network, on behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know we ain't got nothing but love for you. Nothing but love.
Those are romantic relationships, but those are also peer relationships because a predator is not going to look for the young, popular young lady that has all the friends around her and is doing well. That could happen, but they're really looking for someone who's looking for something. So if you talk about what healthy relationships look like, the other thing is that the young women are looking for that love and that attention and for the adults who will tell them, well, that's no good, you shouldn't be with that person. That's not enough information for them to act on and to go on. Some of the exercises or things that we do around building those healthy relationships is talk about goals. What are your goals? And how is that relationship getting you to your goals? You said you wanted to be a teacher, but he actually wants you to sleep with his friends. You know, how is that lining up with where you're trying to go in your life? Young people, there was a research done here with young people that were homeless, that were trading sex, that were sexually exploited and trafficked. And they said the most important thing was that helper, that helping person in their relationship, that teacher, that social worker, whomever that was the most important thing. If they built a relationship with that person and they trusted that person, that was one of the reasons why they got out. of that life. And then keeping them involved. I think that the TOPS program has a program that actually reduces teen pregnancy and teen dropout rate. Now, the program is all based around service learning, and their initial goal was not to drop the teen pregnancy rate, but it was a result of kids being engaged in their community and doing some type of service. And that's not always possible, but if we can get them engaged in some activities, that lowers their risk, their rate of risk for young women. One, and the other thing that I recently read was about young people in relationships and domestic violence, conflict resolution, because some of these incidents of violence are occurring because of poor conflict resolution skills, never been taught or never observed any positive resolutions of conflict.
Well, I think talking to our young people about healthy relationships is definitely a key, because I think some of their relationships, and I'm not just talking about boy-girl, girlfriend-boyfriend kind of relationship, but just who they choose to be friends with and have a relationship with is something that can be of a problem or issue. So thank you for that. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Maya?
Yeah, so I want to take the conversation a different route a little bit and talk about the victimization of trans women of color and the lack of resources. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, that is a great topic for the African-American community. Trans women have high rates of violence. They have high rates of exploitation and trafficking, have extremely high rates of murder. I think that the end of last year, within probably like a 60-day period, we had seen at least 5 or 6 trans women, African-American women, that had been killed. And so getting services to trans women is very, very difficult for many reasons, because there's a lack of appropriate services for them. Should they be served by the men's shelter? Should they be served by the women's shelter? We have a lot of questions regarding morals and values when it comes to trans women. And as a service provider, you know, a lot of times you have to focus on what are the needs of the population of women that you are serving, or the population that you're serving, what their sexual identity is has no bearing on what services that you should be providing. And unfortunately, a lot of service providers can't distinguish that. They can't separate those things. They get their morals and values mixed up with what the service they are supposed to be providing for women. And so that is our challenge as service providers, and then challenges for transgender women is just a lack of culturally appropriate services for them and feeling like they can trust their service provider.
And so what would you say would be appropriate services for them? What would that look like?
For me, if they are identifying as women, then they should have access to the services that we render to women, and that includes space and a domestic violence shelter.
And so just not treating them any different than you would any other woman. Are you saying specifically that we should have, not necessarily saying that we specifically should have a shelter that is just specifically only for trans women, but
no.
When trans women come into our program, we should treat them just as equal as we would anybody else?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, reflect on your, if you have any biases, but reflect on your biases and ask for support and get education would be what I would advise a professional that is giving services. They come with the same trauma and experiences that a lot of our other clients come from. So we need to be service focused. What services do we need to provide for this person that is in need in front of us, and not go beyond what their sexual identity is?
Mm-hmm. And I think I would kind of advocate for both ways, because when I remember working in shelter, and during that time, you know, trans women were not as public about their orientation or their sexuality as they are now, and we know for what reasons. And so it was not just the advocates at that time who were, you know, inappropriate in terms of, you know, being biased and those kind of things. It was also the other survivors in the shelter. So it kind of set up a really, you know, unwelcoming situation for them. Everybody's in the shelter is traumatized and crisis and, you know,
right,
having
right.
that kind of experience. But it's like as soon as somebody says I'm trans or I'm lesbian, I'm gay, I'm queer or whatever, you know, then there's that thing that's out there in the air, you know, and you can't really, you know, talk about it. It's like everybody freezes, and, you know, and so that person begins to feel very uncomfortable. So, I don't know, I kind of would probably advocate for both ways, that we are, you know, we are educated about how to treat everybody the same, as well
yes.
as have an environment where it is culturally, you know, relevant to that population. So I think I would go both ways, though. But what I also want to ask you, too, Artika, and thank you so much for being our guest tonight. This is a really, really good conversation. So there's this term that I hear sometimes in our environment, and it's called compliant victim. And I think about that, especially when, you know, victims are criminalized. And so
right.
it's that good victim, bad victim concept. And so we've talked to other folks about this, but I just want to bring it up again. I don't think we can talk about it enough. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, I want to address the trans woman real quickly. I want to say that it is up to the shelter to create a culture that is conducive and welcoming to everyone. Again, all women come in with severe mental health, a little mental health, severe trauma, not so much. So they all have their individual special needs, and a transgender woman would be the same. She has her individual special needs that need to be met by the shelter. No victim is the same. The other thing is in our community here in the Twin Cities, we just have a lack of funding, period. And so for us to even embark on the concept of trying to raise money for a shelter for a transgender woman just really doesn't seem like it would be something that our community could make happen in a quality way of providing services for transgender women. So those are my thoughts about providing services for transgender women. And then regarding your comments on compliant victims, especially with young women that are seeking attention, that haven't matured in their relationships with their partners, what we see is that they have a trauma bond with their partners. And how an adult woman explained her trauma bond was that she had been with her partner since she was a teenager, 15. They had children together, and he was her pimp. And as she was going through recovery and really pulling some pieces together for her life, she kept on letting him back into her life. And about the third time I asked her, I said, "What's going on? I'm not understanding this. Can you explain this to me? Because you're doing so well." And she said, "Artika, I have been with him for such a long period of time. It's not that I don't see how this relationship triggers me, but I'm scared for him. He's still using. He might get killed on the streets. And although I'm not using and I have a place, I'm gonna bring him back into my life because I have a bond with him. We see that with young women because they hear things from their abuser. I only have you. No one else has faith in me. No one else will help me out. No one does the things that you do for me, and they feel like they are they have a bond, kind of similar to the Stockholm Syndrome, with their abuser. And that's when we look at compliant victim. Although I know this is not right, it doesn't feel good, I have a connection with this person. And he's all I got, or I believe I'm all he has."
So it's that term, compliant, is used in a different way. So in a sense, it sounds like she becomes his protector, talk about that a little bit more.
Caretaker?
It's a bond. I understand it's a bond mm-hmm. between them, but in a sense that, you know, where especially African-American and black women understand that, mm-hmm. you know, we're under siege, black men are under siege and those kind of things, so we don't report the violence because we don't want to be the one that sends him to prison, or we don't want law enforcement involved
right.
in those kind of things. So, but this is more about the bond and the emotional attachment. But it sounded a little bit like to me, I interpreted that a little bit as she protects him too. Is that true, or am I misreading that?
Right, or caretakes for him, you know. All of those things are true, because even black women who say, "I don't want to call the police," that's a real situation. We've had a couple of young men that have died in domestic violence situations where the young woman has called the police, and then the police come, and he ends up dead. He's shot by the police. So that's real for women, and so that's also still protecting him or caretaking mm-hmm. Of that person.
Over her own safety.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're getting pretty close to our time tonight, and one thing we didn't get to talk about was how the criminalization of victims. And so maybe we'll save that for the next time we get together, because I think that's a key piece also. But I want to give you, Artika, a few minutes just to say a last few words, and then Samaya to give you a chance to close out, and then I will close out the show. So, Artika, is there something that's burning on your heart that you just want to get out for our audience to hear?
You know, I think what we talked about a little bit before we were on air is my belief is that we have no teen hookers, teen prostitutes, promiscuous 8-year-old black girls. What we have is young women that are being exploited. And somehow we have to change our language when we're talking about our young women, because at 8, she still should be playing with dolls and board games and not trading sex. And our young women at 16 should be talking about the next level of their education and what that looks like. And so changing our language, not blaming the victim, and even though they may have some behaviors that we don't understand that is a reaction or coming out of the trauma, but working through those pieces with young people, knowing what it looks like and having that listening ear, because they will tell you in their own way, in their own time, what's going on. And then the last piece is knowing what your community resources are and how to link them up with someone that can help them walk through this long process of recovery and healing. And it can happen. I've seen it happen. I know it can happen when the community wraps their arms around this young person and helps them through that.
Thank you. Samaya?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Ellis. And I want to say thank you to Ms. Artika Rola. You have really done a good job tonight in enlightening us and our audience, especially on the work that you do and the population that you serve. And so I'm thinking about all of that and the information that was given in our commentary tonight, that 15% of sexual assault and rape victims are under the age of 12, and that 50% of girl victims, they are violated before they are 18 years old, and that girls between the age of 16 and 19 are four times more likely than the general population to be victims of rape or sexual assault. And so, you know, I have a 16-year-old granddaughter, and so when I'm hearing about these kind of things, I'm thinking about her as well as all other girls, you know, her age. And it just really concerns me in terms of the impact that the violation has on them in their, you know, their formative years. Like you said, the brain developing and how they are developing emotionally and how that the violence impacts them, the trauma of it all. And so some of the things that we're seeing in our school system with girls being labeled, you know, as angry and just outraged and those kind of things, and hoping that our listening audience is taking that into account, that some of that this anger is not just about her personality per se, but something that is triggering her and something that has been done to her. And to just do away with the stigmas about it all, you know, but to be more diligent in looking at what is the cause of all of this and to be more caring about it. So that, Ms. Alice, is my take on what I would want to leave with our listening audience tonight.
Well, thank you both for being with us tonight. And, Samaya, you sort of summed up what I was going to say, because right now our young girls are on my heart because I am doing some work in middle school. So, mm-hmm. And I see some of these behaviors, and it really has me worried. So I want to thank you, Artika, for jumping in here with us tonight and sharing your wisdom and knowledge and the support that you give to others. And, of course, Samaya, I appreciate you and love you so much. And I just enjoy our time together, even when it's just over the air. So I want to just, as a moderator, I'm going to take advantage of this and give a quick shout-out to my nephew, Corey, who's listening, and he's in Atlanta, and this was a subject area he was interested in. So love you, nephew. So I want to just say to everybody, you need to know, remember, today is National Hug Day.
Ah.
So someone.
Send some virtual hugs?
That's right. We could do some virtual hugs. I want you all to consider you've been hugged.
Yes.
Thank you. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next month.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows. of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.
Listening to the Women of Color Network Hour. We hope that you enjoyed the show and found the topic and information useful. If you have any questions about the content of tonight's show or want to learn more about the Women of Color Network, please visit our website at womenofcolornetwork.org. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.